The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
The time now is 2:49, and we will go to 3:49. And I'll recognize the Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Last week, Nova Scotia Teachers Union President Alexis Allen said the NSTU will agree to binding arbitration at the Nova Scotia Community College. Ms. Allen said they would do so because it's a way to avert a strike so students won't lose a year or their term. The Premier still hasn't told us whether he will agree to binding arbitration. He's holding up the process and leaving students anxious about a strike. My question to the Premier, will you agree to binding arbitration?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member opposite for the question. The reality is that there are all kinds of different forms of arbitration. We've made it very clear that in order for arbitration to be an effective tool for the settlement of this matter, it would have to recognize and accommodate the financial and physical realities of the province.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the reason the Premier won't agree to binding arbitration is because he fears he'll have to give NSCC faculty and staff a fair increase.
Exactly.
The Premier is playing politics. He artificially inflated this year's deficit when it was politically convenient. Now he's asking college faculty to pay the price. He has said that the arbitration process must recognize that his government doesn't have the money for an increase. My question to the Premier, can you please tell this House of Assembly why you're putting your political self-interest before students at NSCC?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the fact that we have a $600 million deficit may be an inconvenient truth for the member opposite. You know, Mr. Speaker, the reality is that we are on an unsustainable path and that we are not going to allow that to continue, because the reality is that we care about the community college, we care about the healthcare system, we care about community services, and we are not going to allow all of those systems to be put in jeopardy by running this province into the ground.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Perhaps the Premier should have thought of that when he was prepaying $341 million of an MOU that's not due until next year. Mr. Speaker, this Premier has stood up in this House time and time again and said that he would not interfere with these contract negotiations. Yet now that he is forced to respond to a request for arbitration, the Premier is interfering by putting conditions on the arbitrator. My final question to the Premier is, will you agree to binding arbitration and remove your conditions?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the member opposite has to understand that deficits and debt are not matters of philosophy or ideology. They just exist. They're just real. So, therefore, somebody has to deal with them, and that is us.
Order, the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, in May of 2001, the current premier pressured the government of the day to negotiate fairly with health care workers, saying that when a bargaining unit votes to strike, there are problems that need to be addressed. The members of the NSTU at Community College have voted to strike. My question to the premier is this. Will he explain to this House, to the Community College faculty, and to our guests in the gallery why he is now treating those teachers differently?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and through you to the member opposite. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, in 2001, that government decided that they were going to throw out collective bargaining, that they were going to impose a contract. They weren't going to listen to anybody, Mr. Speaker. We were here 24 hours a day to try and get them to recognize the error of their ways. We believe in collective bargaining, and we're going to leave it at the table.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier stated last week that he would only agree to arbitration if he could be assured that the arbitrator's decision would consider the financial situation of the province. Instead of putting more money on the table so teachers can be treated fairly, the Premier has chosen to put parameters around the arbitrator's decision. Mr. Premier, how can the NSCC teachers believe that they will be treated fairly if you are already interfering with the outcome of the process before it's begun?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think the member opposite truly realizes or understands the way that arbitration works. They are based on the parameters that you take going in. Decisions are made not on the basis of whether or not these things exist without context. They exist in a context. The context for these negotiations is a $600 million deficit left by that government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Premier. The Premier has stated that the province is trying to live within its means, while at the same time his government has budgeted an extra $66 million to buy land. Will the Premier explain to the Community College teachers why he has placed more value on land purchases than on the services that these teachers and professional support staff provide on a daily basis, when less than 2% of the money to be spent on land could resolve this issue?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe the member opposite realizes or remembers that we inherited from them their budget. And their budget, Mr. Speaker, their budget.
The Honourable the Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, their budget provided 0.5% for negotiations with NSCC, which incidentally means nothing for wages, meant there would have had to been a wage freeze, which I assume they intended to put in place through legislation.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last week, a senior official in the Premier's office told my colleague that he had, and I quote, a drawer full of letters to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. We know of one, and that is from the Minister of Fisheries. So my question to the Premier is, how many of your ministers have written to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner looking for advice?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be pleased to tell the member opposite that I asked the member of my staff if that was said, and he assured me it was not.
The Honourable Leader of the Official... The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Is it the public's interest to know which members of Cabinet have had to seek advice from the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, and why? It is a simple matter of openness and transparency. So my question to the Premier is, will you table those letters of all your ministers who have asked the Conflict of Interest Commissioner for advice, as well as his responses?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will not do that. And the reason I will not do it is because there are cases where people ask questions relating to personal financial information. If they are assured that no conflict exists, why, Mr. Speaker, would that be released?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier has been around for a long time. In opposition, he knew the rules related to the Code of Conduct for Ministers of the Crown and conflict of interest. There was no one louder in his condemnation of those who may be in breach of those guidelines. So my question to the Premier is, what instructions did you give to your ministers regarding conflict of interest?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to answer the question. I instructed all my ministers, if they felt there was any reason whatsoever, that they should believe themselves to be in a conflict, however slight, that they should write and get advice.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The conflict of interest guidelines are quite clear. One cannot be a director of a company while the Minister of the Crown. So my question to the Premier is, how many of your ministers still remain as directors of companies?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To my knowledge, the only one I think who would be still a member or a director of a corporation is the Minister of Finance, Minister of Fisheries, which was already disclosed. The reality is that directorships are put in a registration for a year. They last while the company is active. They have to be changed.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier said to his knowledge, with the debate that's been going on in this province over the last number of weeks, you mean to tell me the man in charge of this province would not have asked anyone else that sit in the Executive Council whether or not they believe they're in conflict of interest or whether or not they were a director of a particular company? The guidelines, Mr. Speaker, there for a reason. It has been more than 100 days since your ministers were sworn in. My question to the Premier is, what timeline did you give to your ministers for complying with the conflict of interest guidelines? 1 month? 2 months? 3 months? Pick one.
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I indicated, as I would, that they should follow the advice that they would get from the conflict of interest commissioner.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
As of today, one of your ministers remains president and director of a company, and that is your Minister of Fisheries. I am tabling a letter that will be delivered today to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. It is asking the Commissioner to re-examine the actions of your Minister of Fisheries. We believe, since the Premier will not answer the questions related to this issue, Mr. Speaker, it is in the public interest for the Commissioner to do so. So my question for the Premier is, why did you not instruct your ministers to tell the commissioner everything related to his conflict of interest, including the fact that any money from the Fisheries Loans Board received by the buyer of his license and boat was to be used to pay out his own loan from the Fisheries Loan Board, a board that he oversees?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member knows, because he's heard it many, many times, that the Minister of Fisheries complied completely with the instructions of the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, that the appropriate actions were taken within the department.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, last week the Premier flatly refused to send the issue regarding the Minister of Fisheries' outstanding loan with the Loan Board to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner and to the Public Accounts Committee. We have done the right thing, Mr. Speaker. We have written to both the Public Accounts Committee and the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. I am tabling the letters now, and will the Premier now commit to cooperating fully with Justice Nunn so that the people of Nova Scotia can finally have clarity on this issue?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have always cooperated completely with Commissioner Nunn, as I did in ensuring that the Minister wrote and received instructions and followed them.
The Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier has said that that letter has been written, but I would say, in light of new information that was not initially disclosed, does the Premier agree that a more thorough review is required to officially bring clarity to this issue?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All of the information required of the Minister was fully disclosed. It was fully disclosed to the Commissioner. The advice was received. It was followed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would ask the Premier to review the additional information because I would ask that he acknowledge that that additional information would warrant a more thorough review by Justice Nunn.
The Honourable the Premier.
I don't think there was a question there, but I'm happy to review any information that the Honourable Member is prepared to send to me. What I can say, and I want to commend the Minister of Fisheries for the excellent work he's doing.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries. Mr. Speaker, fishing is an expensive business in this province, especially in the Minister's part of the province, where a lobster license and boat typically cost about $750,000. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Fisheries is, can you tell the House how many applications have been made to the Fisheries Loan Board this year, and how many of those applications have actually been approved?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My understanding of the information the member opposite requires is that the applications have been doubled from the previous year. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in my part of the province, Cape Breton Island, getting your loan approved by the Fisheries Loan Board is compared by some to winning the lottery, Mr. Speaker. Let's just say there are more losers than there are winners. So my question for the Minister is, Mr. Speaker, how many applications to the Fisheries Loan Board are rejected?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The question by the Honourable Member, my understanding is that the unsuccessful rate is less than 2%. I also want to add that there's a very requirement that there's very thorough and these people do the work, and this is a very successful program, and I hope to be a lot more successful in the future. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the budget this year for the Fisheries Loan Board is $16 million. The buyer of the Minister's lobster license and gear received $567,000 from the Fisheries Loan Board to buy the gear. Mr. Speaker, $567,000 in taxpayers' dollars went to the Minister of Fisheries. That's 4%, Mr. Speaker, 4% of the total budget of the Fisheries Loan Board. So my question to the Minister is, what do you have to say, Mr. Minister, to the many fishermen who did not receive a loan from the Fisheries Loan Board because of what the Premier calls this good deal?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I have to say to the Honourable Member opposite is that I followed the process. I have met DFO's policies, and I have consulted with the Commissioner of Conflict of Interest on the very first day that I took office, the very first business day. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question today is through you to the Minister responsible for Lobstergate, the Minister of Fisheries. Nova Scotians feel the issue of the conflict for the Minister of Fisheries and the Minister responsible for the Fisheries and Aquaculture Board unacceptable. The Premier and the Minister continues to stick their head in the sand and hope that Nova Scotians don't see the backroom dealings that are going on. Many young fishermen have been turned down to date by this program. Many fishermen have been turned down, Mr. Speaker. Many have turned down. But when it came to the minister's assets, that fisherman was told not to worry and receive funding that he needed. The minister was quoted in the Chronicle Herald that he didn't know the members of the loan board. When he, matter of fact, he actually played golf with one of them. Nor did he know the man interested in his boat until the prospective buyer checked it out in June. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Fisheries, what did you convey to the buyer in June with respect to the Loans for License program?
I would ask the honourable members, when they ask their questions, to direct them to the proper government department. So the honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, I've answered this question in the previous week, and I engaged a marine brokerage firm in the summer of 2008. I have followed due process. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The honourable member for Argyll on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in the member opposites, in the Minister of Fisheries scrum outside these doors, he said that he met the prospective buyer in June when he went to see the boat. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Fisheries knows that the buyer lives in my community, and he knows that I have had a number of conversations with that buyer. Can the Minister of Fisheries tell this House how many conversations, in person or on the phone, that he has had with the purchaser of the disconnection?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, to you, to the member opposite, I've had a number of discussions with my boat brokerage, and I told when I first met this individual, and I have followed process. I outlined it earlier, and I can outline it again. Thank you very much.
The honourable member for Argyll on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, from my last conversations with the purchaser, he told me the paperwork was just about to be complete, then he'd received the vessel. The only thing remaining was that you were holding back the gear, more specifically the lobster pots, until the money was in your bank account. Mr. Speaker, can the minister confirm that the vessel, licenses, and equipment have all been transferred to the new owner?
Good question.
The honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, I think the member opposite, I don't think we live in an era of Big Brother. This is personal information, Mr. Speaker. I've answered the questions. I have followed the process. Thank you very much.
The honourable member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question through you is for the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection. On Friday, the minister circulated an op-ed piece that was justifying her government's cancellation of the revitalization program. Despite the minister's criticism of the program, there's no denying the fact that the funds that were provided to communities were put to good use to ensure that our aging rink infrastructure was updated, especially for rinks in rural communities, Mr. Speaker. Our rinks are the heart and soul of our communities, especially in rural Nova Scotia. My question to the minister is, does the minister not see that by cancelling this important program, the NDP government is actually striking at the heart of rural Nova Scotian communities?
The honourable Minister for Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the honourable member for the question. Mr. Speaker, as you and all members of this House know, rinks are a very important piece of infrastructure in our communities, and this government values rinks throughout the province, Mr. Speaker, and that's why we have three programs available to assist rinks in their capital and other operating costs, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The honourable member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the minister through you. The minister is quick to point out three other programs that provide funding to rinks, but what she neglects to say and what her op-ed neglects to say is that all three of those programs require matching funds from the community. And that's a big omission because exactly many of our communities, particularly in rural Nova Scotia, have a hard time raising the money they need to keep the rink going. So I think that's an important thing that was not mentioned. And the former program that gave an equal amount of money to rinks that applied did not discriminate against those communities that have the capacity to raise money and those that don't. So my question to the minister is, what do you have to say to rural communities that don't have the resources to raise the necessary matching funds?
The honourable Minister of Health, Protection and Promotion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table two articles from rural newspapers, Mr. Speaker, the Digby Courier and the Advance from Liverpool, Mr. Speaker. In both of these articles, leaders who run arenas have said that the program was a one-time-only program offered by the former government, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, they're very clear. Digby, the head of their arena, says he wasn't caught off guard and it isn't a loss to the operation of that rink, Mr. Speaker. And the same thing is true for the Queen's Memorial Marina, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's worth noting here that the directors of the rink in Port Hood took out a personal loan in order to cover $25,000 that they needed because this program was cancelled and commitments had been made based on the May budget that had been tabled here in the House. So, Mr. Speaker, many communities did not know and were caught unaware by the loss of this program. Antigonish, again, is another one where I did have a chance to visit this week. Mr. Speaker, community groups and community volunteers are stretched to the limit just keeping the doors open at these aging arenas, and the program has been missed tremendously right across the province. My question through you to the Minister is, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister admit that her government made the wrong decision in cancelling this rink revitalization program, and will she now make the right decision by restoring it?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I also was in Antigonish with the Honourable Member on Friday and was delighted to bring $1.5 million in funding for the library in the town of Antigonish, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, with respect to the rink program...
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection has the floor. Madam Minister.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the rink revitalization program, this was a one-time program that had no criteria, that had no application process to speak of, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, we will have ongoing programs to assist with rinks and other recreational facilities across the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week in the House, the Premier said that he indeed would not wade into the Nova Scotia Community College faculty and professional support staff contract dispute, saying he believes in the collective bargaining process and then it needed to run its course. Quote, he says, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and advise the member opposite I have no intention of stepping in the middle of what is a collective bargaining situation. I think it should be resolved at the table, and I'll table it. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is, what the Premier failed to tell the House was at the time that the previous week on Friday, his government had already initiated a 1% cap at the bargaining table, telling the folks there was no more. So why is the Premier telling this House one thing when the unions are being told something different?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know if the member opposite was asleep during cabinet meetings or not, but I mean they have to have a negotiating mandate. That is what they take forward into the collective bargaining process. Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier believes that he's the only one in Nova Scotia. You told him at the table 1%, that's it, no more, don't come back. Now you're telling him to go back to the table and negotiate what? Mr. Speaker, in Cumberland County, for example, there are 500 full-time and part-time students. Individuals that, like the rest of the province, have greatly sacrificed for their education and a better lives for themselves. Mr. Speaker, by standing idly by while this situation unfolds, the Premier is putting the dreams of these individuals and their families in jeopardy. The Premier campaigned on a better deal for today's families. Mr. Speaker, how can the Premier explain today why this is a better deal for the families of the faculty and students of Nova Scotia Community College?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the member's opposite hadn't drained every single cent out of the Treasury before we got there, perhaps there would be more money in order to fund these kinds of important programs. But the reality is that's the position that they left us in. And we understand. And we don't doubt in any way the sincerity of the union and the representation of their members. We don't doubt the value or worth of the community college instructors in any way. We simply have to live with the realities of government, which include the financial realities of the province.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and again to the Premier. If the Premier is looking for some help, he's been given some advice here today. Put some of that land transactions aside. Dip into the $54 million slush fund that you've identified for other things. Mr. Speaker, there are many people who have private contracts at the community college, contracts through EI, through community services. In the event of a strike, these positions will be gone. These people will be forced to go back to life that they're trying to better for themselves and their families. Mr. Speaker, we'll have teachers leave this province, and it'll be as a result of the Premier failing to step in and do his duty, show leadership, and take a step in this right direction, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in light of the daunting reality, will the Premier commit today to binding arbitration for the Nova Scotia Community College faculty with no stipulations and allow the process unfold, as he said weeks ago, should.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've said, there are many different kinds of arbitration. They all rely on the context in which they take place, the bargaining positions of the parties, Mr. Speaker. So, that's something that will have to be determined at the table if there's a possibility to go in that direction. What we won't do, Mr. Speaker, is we won't do what that party was going to do, which is to budget virtually zero in the budget for any kind of wage negotiations, and then, as they did in 2001, impose a collective agreement and take away the right of people to collective bargaining.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Exactly 2 weeks ago today, Mr. Speaker, our health critic and the member from Halifax Clayton Park brought to the attention of the Minister of Health the case of Jean. As you may recall, Mr. Speaker, the only thing keeping Jean from returning home from her extended stay at the Abbey Lane is additional support, which can be provided if she was able to access the Caregiver's Allowance Program. So my question for the Premier is, has Jean been reassessed for the Caregiver Allowance Program as per the Minister's response in Hansard on September 29th?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I of course, cannot confirm or deny that because I can't speak to any individual case. But I will leave it to the Minister of Health to determine whether or not, A, she knows whether or not reassessment has taken place, and B, whether or not even that information could be released to the member office.
The Honourable the Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And to the Honourable Member, I can't speak to any specific case, but let me say, Mr. Speaker, that I have made a commitment to various members around this issue of the caregiver's allowance that we would reassess if requested to do so, and those requests have gone back into the department, and particularly they've gone back into the department when members provide us with the full name, address, all of that kind of stuff, Mr. Speaker. So that's all I can tell the Honourable Member.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition,
Mr.
on your
Speaker,
first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's a reassessment. Her department already denied them. They have all that information. What do they need members over here to give them the information for? Ask her own department. She's looking for information on this constituent and other Nova Scotians who are being denied from this program. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health staff emailed Lorena, the individual advocating for Jean, on October 1st, responding to an email from the Premier's office. So far, there's been no response forthcoming from the email, and there's been no reassessment as promised by the Minister 2 weeks ago. Since October 1st, care provided for Jean has cost about $12,000, the equivalent of over 2.5 years of support through the Caregiver's Allowance Program. Perhaps the most tragic part of this situation is the fact that Jean is becoming further depressed. She simply wants to go home. So my question for the Premier, given the tremendous personal and financial costs associated with this case, why has your government failed to reassess Jean as you promised her on September 29th?
The Honourable the Premier.
Oh, pardon me. As the member opposite would understand, there are many cases coming into the department already. We're doing our best to keep abreast of all of the assessment that takes place. There are a limited number of staff, but I can assure you that if the Minister of Health said that the reassessment will take place, it will take place.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Lorena and Jean are seated in your gallery today. Staff at the Abbey Lane has recommended the Caregivers Allowance Program so that care can be provided for Jean during times when home care is not providing service, a program for which Jean has been denied. So my question to the Premier is, can you tell Jean and Lorena, who are with us today, when the reassessment for the Caregivers Allowance Program will take place, as you promised, on September 29th?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, as I said to the member, there is a lot of people who have applied to the department because prior to this date, there would have been no program available for anyone. So we put in place a program, and admittedly, Mr. Speaker, we are still working through the difficulties that are associated with the program. But my colleague, the Minister of Health, is working hard with the department to ensure that as best we can, under the limited resources we have, we meet the needs of the people of the province.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, this past Friday, the labour force survey results were released for September. These results were not good news for Nova Scotians. The labour force declined by 0.2%, employment declined by 0.2%, and unemployment increased by 0.4%. Mr. Speaker, the unemployment rate is currently at 9.5%, and the NDP does not seem to have a strategy to fight these climbing numbers. My question to the Minister is this: how does the Minister plan to keep unemployment below 10%?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the global recession is affecting Nova Scotia as it is affecting every province. There were a number of provinces whose unemployment rate went up in the most recent figures. Mr. Speaker, we are doing what we can. We have a series of tax credits. We have a series of economic development initiatives. My colleague, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development, has been questioned for hours in the estimates process about the many plans and projects at his department. Mr. Speaker, times are difficult, but we expect to turn the corner along with the rest of the Canadian economy. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, full-time employment in Nova Scotia has decreased 0.6% between August and September 2009. It has decreased 1.2% since last September. Mr. Speaker, the 9.5% unemployment rate is bad enough, but it may be hiding more concerning issues. For example, part-time workers looking for full-time work or those who have given up. Mr. Speaker, the jobless recovery may point to a double-dip recession, which is something that no one wants. However, we have yet to see a comprehensive strategy that goes beyond ministerial slogans such as "we have to live within our means" and excuses like "it's the previous government's fault." Mr. Speaker, slogans are not strategies, and Nova Scotians are tired of listening to ministerial excuses. My question is this: what is the minister's strategy to help Nova Scotians rebuild?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, my colleague, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development, has spoken for a number of hours now in the estimates debate and has gone into some length about the programs and projects that this government have in order to improve productivity, to increase employment. Let me mention one in particular, Mr. Speaker. The Manufacturing Processing Tax Credit, which this government brought in, will give our employers the incentive they need to improve their technology, to increase productivity, and to increase employment.
Yeah. The Honourable Member from King's West on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the unemployment rate has been creeping toward the 10% mark since this government took office. Mr. Speaker, today there are fewer people working in Nova Scotia. There are more people who are unemployed. Today, Nova Scotians want more from their government than being lectured to about tough choices. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Minister is this. With an unemployment rate of 9.5%, why are we still waiting for a strategy from this government which will get Nova Scotians back to work?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, in addition to the excellent work that my colleague, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development, is doing, in addition to the manufacturing and processing tax credit that I referred to in my previous answer, we've also implemented the new home construction rebate, which that member has been very down on, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, that rebate has got builders building and it's got buyers buying.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Fisheries. Mr. Speaker, during question period Thursday past, I asked the Minister of Fisheries if he would provide a written statement by the end of business that day by his Deputy Minister outlining his discussions, involvement, transaction and direction from the Minister. Thursday passed, Friday passed, and here we are 3 business days later and no response from the Minister. Again, will the Minister inform this House if he will or won't supply a written statement from his Deputy Minister?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. To the member opposite, I have had that discussion with my Deputy, and that is in the works. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Mr. Speaker, it's pretty bad when the Minister, his Premier and Cabinet will not come clean on a matter that merits full and open disclosure before this House. At the coffee shops and on the street corners, people are asking why the government is refusing to answer reasoned and reasonable questions from a matter involving hundreds of thousands of taxpayers' dollars, involving potential conflicts of interest, and more importantly, involving the Minister. Now, the Minister said he's working on it. Well, Mr. Speaker, he should have had it done because it should have been in writing in the first place. So my question to the Minister is, when will he supply that documentation to this House, as he should have done in the first place, to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. To you, to the Honourable Member opposite, I have followed the process and I'll do that in the appropriate time. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The people of Nova Scotia, he says due process, but they have been not giving full and fair disclosure of true process, not due process. Nova Scotians are looking for the true process of what's gone on here, Mr. Speaker. The fact that our leader has been forced to turn to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner and I, as a member of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, to write to the Chair and to have the matter considered more fully is a sad statement of how this NDP government operates. Again, Mr. Speaker, since the Minister still does not commit fully to this process, will the Premier commit to cooperate with the Conflict of Interest Commissioner's Office and the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, or will use his majority on the committee to block full and fair consideration of this important matter?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, as I've said before, we have done everything that we can to comply with all of the rules. We have written to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. We followed his advice. My response to the member opposite is if he has one scintilla of evidence, table it.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. A year ago, on November 3, 2008, the government of the day announced in a press release a change in accommodation rates for some long-term care residents. This press release was similar to ones that were issued in 2006 and 2007 as well, and they each included an explanation for the increases in the accommodation charge for seniors in long-term care as well as other facilities. My question, Mr. Speaker, through you to the Minister is, could the Minister please confirm whether her government has made any changes to the maximum accommodation rates that will become effective November 1st for long-term care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health is required to give a 30-day notice to long-term care facilities across the province if rates are going to change, and indeed we sent notices out to the long-term care facilities that rates would be changing the 1st of November. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, we have heard from residents of long-term care who say that their rates are going up, and they're going up, Mr. Speaker, a staggering 9.5%, almost 10%. That's a daily increase of $8.25 for the people who pay the full cost of accommodation. That means $250 a month and a full $3,000 extra a year, Mr. Speaker. That certainly is a high price to pay for those that are in the homes, and as I say, 10% is a staggering amount per year. We're looking for more open and transparent government and more open and transparent justification of the decisions of government. But, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, could the minister please outline to the people who are going to have to be paying this increased amount what additional services, if any, they can expect to see in light of this steep increase?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member will know that we have embarked on a process to replace and add additional beds in the long-term care sector. The costs reflect these new facilities and these expansions, Mr. Speaker. And for this reason, we see an increase in the daily rates. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it certainly won't be any consolation to people who are left in the other facilities with no change in services, no change in the environment that they're in, to see their rates go up by 9.5% this year. Mr. Speaker, this has been a series of increases since 2006, and this is just the latest. But in previous years, it's been much smaller, much, much smaller, just $1 a day increase in 2006. This year, we're seeing $8.25 increase per day. So, Mr. Speaker, I think that has a very serious impact on seniors, and particularly, as we know, they're on limited incomes. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the minister as my final question how the minister can justify a full 10% increase, $3,000 a year increase to seniors.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as you and all members of the House will recognize, the operating of long-term care has gone up. There are staffing costs, the increase in wages, the increase in insurance, in heating, in food, in all of these costs, Mr. Speaker. Additionally, we've had an expansion of beds, and this has meant an additional cost to the system, Mr. Speaker. This is why we have had to increase the daily rates. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Beef farmers in this province are hurting. They need the government's assistance, Mr. Speaker. The president of the Nova Scotia Cattlemen's Association, David Alton, is a constituent of mine. You also have good people like Kurt Sherman in Cumberland County, whose operation is now day-to-day. Mr. Speaker, beef farmers in Nova Scotia want to know when the minister is going to live up to his comments made during the campaign. At a farm forum in Port Williams on June the 1st, that if an NDP government were elected, commitments made by the previous government would be honoured. Mr. Speaker, the comments were delivered over 6 months ago, and Nova Scotia cattlemen still have no word. Is the minister going to live up to his word, and if so, when?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, the comments that the member for Hants West indicates, this government has fulfilled its commitments around commitments by the previous government, but not every spoken word from members of the former government when they were on the campaign trail is deemed to be a commitment by the government. Members of the cabinet, former cabinet, would recognize if it didn't go through due process, it wasn't a commitment by the government, something they seem to have forgotten. As far as the cattlemen in Nova Scotia, we do have a plan, which I hope to soon be able to announce. I've made it a commitment to stay in touch with Mr. Olton on a monthly basis, and I'll be calling him later today to back up that commitment. I want the member to be aware that personally, I made a commitment to try to help cattlemen not associate with any previous Tory commitment, and I stand behind my commitment to them.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I hope Kurt Sherman, who's just about ready to go bankrupt now any day, will take solace in those words. Page A3 of a Chronicle Herald, 6 days into an election campaign, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker, the NDP discussed a 10-year farm plan where better export markets could develop, for example. Is help for the beef industry part of this so-called 10-year plan?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for his question. As far as beef producers or cattle producers as part of a 10-year strategy, definitely they'll be part of that. But the more immediate to being long range is to try to ensure that we have some industry left to be able to implement a strategy for. And that's what we're kind of working on two fronts right now, short-term and long-term.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Minister of Agriculture. More than 6 years ago, September 26, 2003 to be exact, the now Minister of Agriculture delivered these words in this legislature, and I'll table this, Mr. Speaker. And I quote, "Will the government show its real commitment to agriculture and offer immediately a program of dollars that will save suffering farmers from a crisis that was not in their making?" End of quote. Mr. Speaker, the previous government invested millions and millions of dollars into the beef industry, such as the $10 million to assist farmers, beef farmers during the height of BSE. Are the words used by the Minister of Agriculture in this House of Assembly back in 2003 a figment of his own imagination, or does he intend to help the struggling Nova Scotia beef industry?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. It should be obvious if the member from the former government has to ask that question, then the money they spent didn't do any good. On this side of the House, Mr. Speaker, it's my hope to be able to spend some dollars to help the cattle industry, but it'll be spent in a strategic way so that we actually have a cattle industry when the money is spent. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, so far this year, there have been 5 fatalities related to all-terrain vehicle accidents. There have also been a number of serious accidents relating to OHV riding. I've had several comments from OHV riders, and they believe a strong, focused safety initiative is lacking from government. My question to the Minister, what is government's plan to increase safety for OHV riders in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think the member opposite asks quite a reasonable question. He would be aware that the regulations were rolled back in a number of areas by the previous government, one of that around training. I've asked my staff to have a relook at that. But it is an issue that I have to say that I'm sensitive to, and I do want to take a closer look and see what it is the government is able to do to help stop, I would say, the potential for deaths with the use of ATV or injury.
The Honourable Member from Kings West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in early October, a man claiming he was harassed by ATV riders fired a shotgun at drivers. This is extremely alarming, Mr. Speaker. Tensions surrounding OHV riders and their proximity to homes and communities have been growing for years. We know, Mr. Speaker, that the vast majority of riders are responsible and are outdoor enthusiasts, but clearly there are some who act recklessly and therefore dangerous, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, are you planning to increase the number of OHV enforcement officers in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Not at this present time. The member would recognize that the previous government installed 12 officers kind of specialized in this regard. But within the province, we have 70 conservation officers that can work on ATV regulation and law enforcement issues. So but presently, I would say that we're not planning to increase that number.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, since August 2007, the health community has been without a voice on the Minister's Advisory Committee for OHVs. Safety should be the province's primary concern when it comes to off-highway vehicles of any sort, and by not filling this position, the Advisory Committee is incomplete and lacks proper consultation from health professionals. My question to the Minister, will you be announcing a replacement for a medical official on your Advisory Committee, and when will that be?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. I have to tell him, to be quite honest, I'm thinking I've seen something across my desk in that regard, and I'll check a little further on that and get back to him with a better answer to his question. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Mr. Premier, you campaigned vigorously for a public auto insurance system during the 2003 election campaign. With insurance rates having fallen and now stabilised, will you confirm today for Nova Scotians that your government has no plans for the introduction of any public auto insurance plan for Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member opposite would understand, during the last election campaign, what we did commit to was a full insurance review, which will take place next year.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in June, the Premier told Metro News the cap on minor injuries is too broad, and he suggested some injury claimants haven't been fairly compensated after life-altering collisions. My question through you to the Premier, are you contemplating setting the deductible high enough so that only those with major injuries would proceed with the claim?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and we expect this to be part of the insurance review, which will take place next year.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My final question to the Premier. Will you commit today, after oral questions, to meet with the President of the NSTU and staff that are in the gallery today?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm always pleased to receive any kinds of requests directly to meet with myself. I'm certainly willing to meet, but I will say, Mr. Speaker, I do believe that the collective bargaining process should be at the collective bargaining table.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier, Mr. Speaker. During the election, the Premier said cabinet size would be 12 members. Mr. Speaker, in the throne speech, the government said keeping their promises is important. So my question for the Premier is, does he plan to increase the size of cabinet, or will his commitment to 12 members last the length of this government?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member opposite for his question, and I know that there are a lot of people on that side wondering the answer to that question. There are also a lot of people on this side wondering what the answer to that question. What I would like to assure the member opposite, is that I said right from the very beginning that we would reduce the size of cabinet. We have done that. I said over the days that followed the appointment of cabinet that we would take the opportunity to assess on an ongoing basis the effectiveness of the number that we have and whether or not we would want to add additional members at a future date. And, Mr. Speaker, I can say that I'm very very pleased. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I have to say it's been a wonderful experience so far with the size of cabinet that we've had.
The honourable member, order, please. Order. The honourable member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier may want to talk to some of his backbenchers. He should be aware some of them are suggesting they should be in Cabinet. And I'll table for the House a newsletter from the member of Cole Harbour Eastern Passage provided for us by someone from the constituency. And in it, the member says, "I am not in Cabinet yet." Implying that she's been told by the Premier that she's in line for such a spot.
Order, so order, order. The time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.